Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 48 Blitz is a collection of short stories that travels through very familiar territory for any Midwesterner. The stories take place in Nebraska towns or rural areas, all within reach of I-80, with some side trips. Carhenge makes more than one appearance. The stories are short slices of life found on farms, football fields, fast food restaurants, and in homes. This is the debut collection from Brett Beeble, who lives in the Quad Cities and teaches creative writing and composition at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. He is on the line with me now. Hello, Brett.
Hi, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And many of these stories are very, very short stories. So why don't you introduce us to your work by reading all of the story, Warriors?
Sure. The story is called Warriors. Because I used to be pretty good at football, they like to send me these invites to speak at high schools around the state. I say no a lot, but sometimes things line up or I need the money, and inevitably there'll be a Q&A and some kid will ask what I remember most. They'll think I'm going to talk about the Big 12 championship or the Fiesta Bowl, and so by the time I finish, it's mostly just prairie silence, crickets and aphids whispering at night. I tell them about the kid from Sydney coming across the middle, how I blew him up good and he made it sound like an empty milk jug. I say, the way he was lying there, the high fives, the grass in my face mask, that's all flickering. It goes in and out, and sometimes the details change. His angle on the ground, where the ball is, how long we kneel in prayer. What I really remember is how the next Monday at practice, we still didn't know if he was going to walk again, and Coach Bradley brought us together first thing. He called us men. He told us to listen up. He said I did everything right, and that was just football, and we are defined by our response to things beyond our control. My teammates kept pounding my shoulder pads softly. I thought about God and my parents and this girl Lee I used to watch from the sidelines on Friday nights. Then Coach said he wanted a sharp practice. Hit with your heads up, but don't let it keep you from hitting hard. He said he wanted a Warriors on three, and we came together and shouted like we meant it, like we believed every single word.
That's Warriors by Brett Beeble from his new collection, 48 Blitz. And the stories in this collection are about all kinds of different slices of life. Although football does come back again and again, is football something that has been important in your life?
I didn't play a lot of football. I played when I was very, very young, but certainly as a spectator and as a fan. My dad was a basketball coach at high school, the high school and college level, and so spending a lot of times in gyms and around sports. So sports have been a big part of my life, and football really fit with the setting of the book. Just, you know, living in Big Ten country, wanting to write a story in Nebraska, it's such a big part of American culture and Midwest culture that it felt like something that just had to be there. And it's something that I'm drawn to, sports and football in particular.
Where did you grow up?
I lived around the Midwest. I was born in the Fox Cities of Wisconsin, Appleton, Wisconsin area. And my family moved to Winona, Minnesota when I was, I think, in middle school. So spent most of young adulthood in Winona, Minnesota, which is just 2 hours south of the Twin Cities, Bluff Country. So small town, colleges, but also very rural county. So lots of time in kind of those settings. And have lived in Iowa. My mom is family in Nebraska and Illinois, so have been all around the Midwest.
What made you want to write about Nebraska?
A couple of things. I think, first of all, I had always heard from people. I've taken a couple of drives along I-80 to Colorado, and whenever I tell somebody I'm taking that drive, they always tell me, oh, man, I-80 is so boring. And I'm a contrarian by nature, so I was like, no, it's not boring. I'm going to write a book about it. And so that was part of it. But I think it was also that I found a really kind of open beauty to that landscape and just sort of how open it is. And you're flying through and sort of thinking about, you know, what does life look like here? So I was really drawn to that. I'm really drawn to the contradictions of the Midwest. You know, in my time here, you know, I found it to be genuinely friendly, But it can also be insular. And I think that contradiction is really powerful when it comes to creating literature. And that's something that I felt a lot, you know, in Iowa and in Nebraska.
Did you travel in Nebraska? Did you spend time driving up and down I-80 to seek inspiration for this collection?
You bet. I think, you know, it's funny how things stack up and when things come to you. I think this collection probably started, you know, 20 years ago when I was in college, driving through that stretch of highway and just sort of being kind of wowed by the landscape. I think we drove through it in the middle of the night. And so, that, you know, there's something about dawn, or early, you know, pre-dawn, where you just feel a certain way. But I don't think it came together as a story until we moved away from the Midwest for a while. And we lived in Raleigh, North Carolina. My family and I came back to Iowa. And then it sort of comes flooding back to you about how you feel about this place and the people and the landscape. And so then it sort of clicks that, like, oh, yeah, this could be a book. The stories are real and powerful and worth writing about.
This collection has a lot of intertwining threads. We see characters come back again and again, and there are things that happen. I mean, the book begins with an execution, but we see things come back from that later on in other stories. And all right, if this was something that you wrote over a very long period of time, tell me how those threads came to be.
You know, I think it starts with all of the stories that I write. A lot of them start with an image or a moment. And I'm drawn to very short forms because it feels manageable to me to be able to make the world make sense in a small, condensed space. But I also really love the feeling of kind of getting lost in the landscape of a novel or a book with a large universe. And so, you know, I always knew that I kind of wanted to give that experience, put that experience on the page. And so I felt like I needed a structure, and that's really where the setting of the book came in. You know, once I realized that, like, okay, all of these stories can be set in Nebraska, and most of them can be set along I-80, then it felt like, okay, suddenly people can come back, right? And so you're able to find places where, like, okay, I told this moment in their life, but now I'd like to tell another one. And in this format where it's a lot of short stories piled back to back, I didn't feel the pressure to sort of tie up the threads. I could just think in discrete moments. And that felt easier to me. It felt more natural to me as I was writing this book. And I think that really helped kind of push the narrative forward.
As I mentioned, this starts with an execution. And this collection has been out now for a couple of months. And it was released almost simultaneously with the resumption of federal executions. Did you feel like you had been foretelling the future?
I don't know about that. I had seen the news, and it's funny how writing works. You know the publishing process, it takes time, and then something will pop up, and you'll say, "Oh yeah, I did write about that." And so I think that was something I noticed. I think I've always wanted to write a book about sort of what is happening in the United States, especially with politics and with sort of the urban-rural divide. And I wanted to do that in a way that felt real and layered. And I think those kinds of things are at the center of the book. And the death penalty is one of those sort of divisive issues that I think typifies that sort of divide. And setting it on the same day as a football game, it just felt like there was a symmetry there, which I think is why sports play such a big part in the book.
Your stories are short, they are evocative, and you don't tell your reader what to think. You seem to want us to do a lot of work here to figure out how we feel about what we're reading. How do you think about your readers?
I've always really liked reading books where there's a lot of space for the reader. I think that's sort of what helps me feel like a book is lived in, being able to kind of wander around in a landscape and getting to know these characters. It feels like a more active experience for me. And so I think there, you're right, that there is an intentional sort of trying to create that for other people. And I think there's, I think great literature is complexity and contradictions. And asking somebody to sort of grapple with those contradictions feels like sort of the purpose of the medium to me, forcing people to sort of recognize that this is both good and bad, wonderful and ugly at the same time. And I think a lot of these characters are feeling that. And I think that's one of the unique things about literature is it does allow you to tell a complicated story. When I think about narrative, I think the most powerful narratives are often the most layered ones, as opposed to the simple ones. Even though the simple ones have big audiences often, right, and can be very powerful in their own right, I think I'm drawn to the layered narratives that do sort of force people to see themselves and maybe even implicate themselves a little bit, right? But that's always a fine line because you want to do it softly, I think, and that is one of my big hopes for the collection, I think.
Well, I do think that anybody who lives in the Midwest will either see themselves or at least people that they know very well in this book. They also may find themselves in the same kind of fast food drive-through. There is a fast food chain that is another one of those threads that connects almost every story in this collection. Tell me about your inspiration for that.
I remember seeing a commercial for Jack in the Box, I think it was in the 90s, and they had this E. coli scandal, and in the commercial, they show the mascot, he's blowing up the boardroom, I think, and the idea is that sort of like, hey, it's a new regime, right? So you can feel safe to come eat at a Jack in the Box again, and yet underneath it, there's this tragedy, right? And the commercial is incredibly sort of slick, it's very entertaining, but it's born out of this, I think, sort of crass need to sell hamburgers after your company has suffered a reputational hit, and there's a death at the core of that I think gets lost when it gets translated to a commercial, and I think that stayed with me when I saw that ad and when I thought about that ad and sort of trying to unravel all of those different layers of it was something that was important for me to do, I think. That's sort of how that story started. And then once you start spawning it, it just spills and spills and spills, right?
I mean,
there's more sort of marketing schemes and more sort of locations, and the business grows. And I think that shows through the collection.
Right. And you would definitely want to eat it for your last meal if you were on death row as well. Yeah. And the company would definitely want to sell that very same meal to other people, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about your literary inspirations. As I mentioned, I mean, these stories are extremely short. It's a style that you don't find in a lot of places these days, although I can think of a few people through history who have really mastered this very short story approach. Who are your inspirations?
Some of the authors that I most love actually write really long, massive books, like Thomas Pynchon or David Foster Wallace. But I think the writer that really spoke to me while I was writing this was Donald Bartlemy, who writes a lot of very short stories. He's a sort of late 60s kind of writer, and so he was somebody that stuck with me. But I see a lot of people writing very short fiction. Now, I teach fiction also, and I find the short form very, very useful in a class because we can read a story in 3 minutes and then have a very deep discussion about language and character and story, and I find that really useful. So there's lots of folks right now writing, I think, great short fiction. Kathy Fish is somebody who blurbed the book. She's got a quote on the back, which meant a lot to me because I think her work is wonderful. Also, very Midwestern, and so she's somebody also that whose work has meant a lot to forming what I wanted these stories to be.
You mentioned those deep conversations you can have out of a very short story. So what conversations do you want to spark? What should we be talking about after we read 48 Blitz?
That's really a good question. I think there's a lot of them. One of the things you notice as you get away or get some distance from the book is I start noticing sort of all sorts of different themes. I think for me, there are a couple of big ones. And one of the big ones is the connection between sports and politics. I'm a sports fan, And so I'm very, very good at taking information and bending it to my preferred narrative. So when I watch football, I root for the Green Bay Packers. It is very easy for me to say everything the Packers do is moral and right and just because they're publicly owned. And the same thing happens in baseball. You know, it's very easy for me to root for the Brewers because we're a small market Milwaukee team, and when we go up against the big market machine that is the Cubs, everybody should root for us because that's truth and justice in the American way. And I think that happens in politics too. I think the more we're steeped in that kind of mentality, the easier it is for us to fall into that idea of politics as a team sport. And I noticed that and feel like I've been noticing that more and more, especially over the last, you know, 5-10 years, is that we get used to doing that kind of mental switch where it suddenly stops being a conversation about values or beauty or a great play or teamwork and becomes a conversation about who won and who lost and who's up and who's down. And that's hard to avoid. And I think it creates a lot of problems. And I think some of that is present in the book. I think that's one of the big themes that I was thinking about as I was writing. So I do hope that's something that comes through.
Yeah, you definitely introduce us to at least one politician who is all style and no substance, but he bowls a mean game.
Yeah. And that story was so fun to write. I think that's part of it, is that getting caught up in the game, whether it's football or bowling, is fun. It's fun to watch state change colors, at least for me. I mean, there's something that draws me to it, that draws me to the competition. And at the same time, I can do that and know that it's bad for me, I think, on a larger level.
Kind of like eating fast food, right?
Yes, exactly. That's a really soft observation. Yeah, I think there are all of those connections, for sure.
Well, Brett, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Brett Beeble is the author of 48 Blitz. That's his debut collection of short stories. They all take place in Nebraska along the I-80 corridor. Brett Beeble lives in the Quad Cities, and he teaches creative writing and composition at Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Matt Alvarez, Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Here First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I have spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Here First wherever you get your podcasts.